Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, happy Tuesday, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm your co-host, Michelle Pache. I'm here today with our forgiveness doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. We warmly welcome you to the show, and thank you for choosing to be with us. Today is October 22nd. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk with Michael. We would love to hear comments and questions, because then that makes this your show. So now let's welcome Dr. Rice in the process of learning and practicing forgiveness.
So, Michelle,
thank you, young lady. It's a delight to be here. We're in Albufeira, Portugal, where it's a little on the cloudy, cool, rainy side today, but that's just part of the game. It's a gorgeous day, and we're delighted to be sharing this space with you. And a couple of days ago, I talked about battle and that when you listen to a language that you don't speak, notice that all the words that somebody says, you know, if I happen to be German speaking and I listen to someone speaking English, I say, well, it's just babble. I'm English, I listen to someone speaking German and said, that's just babble, or I listen to Japanese or Chinese or Russian or whatever it is, it's all babble. None of it means a thing to me if I don't speak that language. Well, here's a thought for you. If you do speak the language, who told you that what it means is true? Who told you that the whole belief system, the whole thought structure, the language has anything to do with truth? And does it have anything to do with truth? We have a question that we ask when we open the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop. Actually, Jeannie usually asks this question. That is, how many have ever held a newborn child? And then Jeannie asks to each person to describe in a single word the essence of that newborn. It comes up with this beautiful list of words: purity, sweetness, pure presence, awesome presence, love, all words based in the active presence of love. And when you think about that, if the language that you babble in does not have at its foundation an accurate, true description of who you are, that you live with in that language active every day, then how do you know that every word that you're saying about yourself isn't a lie? How do you know that your babble, French, German, Russian, Israeli, whatever it happens to be, how do you know that everything your babble tells you isn't just a pure fabrication? And my offering is that if it is not an active part of your language to describe yourself and everybody that you interact with, men, women, and children, friends or enemies, if it isn't a part of your babble to language yourself And those people you interact with as the active presence of love, maybe everything you're saying about yourself and others is a lie. So I invite you to just think about that for a moment and then recognize that whoever sourced your language for you is the one who's running your mind. And if the language that you speak on a daily basis about yourself and the people around you is based in hostility or fear, maybe it's time to just give up the lies. Maybe it's time to give up the lies that you tell about others when you describe them as angry, problematic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe when you describe yourself as hopeless, helpless, weak, victim, maybe it's time to give up all of the lies you tell yourself. Maybe it's time to engage in and create a language that's true about you. So that when somebody says, who are you, in whatever form of babble you happen to speak, your automatic, instant first thought is, oh, I'm the presence of love. I'm the love of God in action and in activity in the world. I am this pure presence of being that blesses everybody that I touch. What if that were your first thought about yourself instead of your current babble? How different would your world be? How different could the whole game be? And so I just invite you to think about that and consider that maybe there's some things in your babble that need to be given up. If it's based in hostility or fear, it's a lie, it's time to give it up. What does giving it up look like? What is giving up false babble look like? Well, I'd offer out of the ancient Aramaic context, the Aramaic language, the word forgiveness does not describe the act of me letting you off the hook because you triggered something in my babble that was painful for me. The word forgiveness describes a tool with which, if I'm in pain, if I'm babbling about myself in some language other than the awesome presence of love, then I apply forgiveness to that babble and I remove it. I remove what never belonged. Who would have thunk it? Who ever told us forgiveness is about removing content from your mind? Forgiveness is about coming out of captivity. Forgiveness is about being liberated from the lies you've been told about yourself and the people around you that you're something less than love. So I'm here to offer language to you. You, being, you, whatever you just said about yourself or thought about yourself, could be experiencing physiologically the literal active presence of love in every cell of your structure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. But you can't do it out of the language of the lie because the language you use creates feelings. The language you use tells your cells how they should be responding to the world. And so forgiveness is about removing that which never belonged. And if you'd like to access the technology of forgiveness, which is primarily what this work is all about, then what we invite you to do is we invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner, there's a link that says Start Here, or in the middle of the page, there's a bullseye in red and white. If you click on that link, it'll give you a whole series of links that will tell you all about how to get engaged in the forgiveness process. It'll give you the worksheet process. There are at least 6 radio shows there where step-by-step we walk somebody through every piece, every nuance of the forgiveness process. So I invite you to put that to work into your life and watch how the babble disappears and how things begin to change. And so, Michelle, you have any thoughts in regard to those comments?
Actually, I was just chatting with Jeannie, telling her a little bit about the last couple minutes of the show yesterday. So I'm still processing some stuff from yesterday as far as where my thoughts are right now.
Aha. Cool.
Dr. Tim can fill you in. He called me up.
Is Dr. Tim with us today?
Yes, he is.
Well, let's say hello to Dr. Tim. Ask him how he be. How are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderfully well. I'm here with Rex, Brea, Mark, and Julie, and we're having a two-day conference on how to try and bring these tools to more people in more ways. And so everyone is listening in. We're on speakerphone here in the conference. And thank you for your intro. It was a very nice lead-in to let Julie, who's our coach, learn more about this work. And what it resonates for me is how beautiful it all is, because we were just sitting here trying to talk about what language will we use to present this work to the world, and you just highlight the importance of it being that language of love in one way or another. So, and I will invite anybody else who's at the table to speak up if you're so moved to say something. Hello to Michael.
Hello, Michael. This is Mark.
And hey there, young man. How do you be?
Doing really well, and I thank you for reaching out the last couple of days. We've been busy in the room here and haven't had a chance quite to get back with you, but thank you for reaching out and expressing your thoughts of care toward me. And life is good. We've had such a remarkable day yesterday and this morning so far that it's brought the vision from the 50,000 foot level down. I think we're about the 10,000 foot level, and we're getting to a place where we're working toward a practical execution of a business model.
Cool, that's fabulous. Well, I had no idea until I talked to Tim just a little earlier this afternoon that you guys were doing that meeting, but I did have this strong urge and inclination to call you, which I did and left a message, to call Bray, which I did and left a message, to call Rex, which I did and left a message, and to call Dr. Tim. So I just had this really strong inclination. Had no idea you all were together there in the same room, but anyway, glad to hear it. Must have been hearing the conversation happening.
Well, Michael, this is Julie Colbreeze. I'm a coach here in Chicago, and this is the first time I've been exposed to your work, and it's lovely to hear your voice, and you've been very present here this morning as they've been sharing some of your work and teachings with me.
Delighted. Nice to meet you, Julie. I'll look forward to getting to the point where we get to see you face-to-face.
Likewise. Thank you.
Hi, Michael.
Cool.
It's
awesome.
Rex.
Welcome. Well, are there any questions about the work that you've formulated that haven't been answered for you that I can assist and support? And if you do have some questions, especially being new to it, this is an awesome place to air them, because there are others who are new to the work and you know, perhaps are on the show for the first time today that will benefit from any answers that we can come up with. So if you've formulated any questions in being in interaction and dialogue with everybody there, that would certainly be fabulous if you'd share those questions with me. And it is just so amazing that here we sit under the cloudy skies of Albufeira, Portugal today, going through a network in New York, as you guys sit in Chicago, and here we are having this conversation, and people from all over the globe are able to listen in. It's pretty amazing technology.
Well, Michael, right before we got ready for the show, the conversation was being held about how people, including Brea's husband, have such a difficult time with the concept of canceling the goal.
And
yes.
To clarify, Michael, thank you for being a part of our group, even though you didn't necessarily know you were being a part of our intentional meeting the past few days. And the
Hey, Brea.
clarification on that question of the goal canceling, Zach experiences, my husband is Zach, experiences the profound transformation that occurs when a goal is canceled and the value of that process, and sees it within me and within himself and people in our world. And yet the idea of intellectually, for him to understand the idea of, I'm going to cancel what I want? What do you mean? And so I would love to have a little bit more vocabulary about how to share that concept in a way that perhaps is received differently by people, that maybe doesn't trigger quite as much confusion or resistance on the offset.
Sure. Well, I certainly understand not understanding it when one's first introduced to it. I know that I've been teaching people to cancel goals for almost a third of a century now. And the reason I've been teaching it is because it simply works to produce healing. It works to put people in touch with hidden parts of their minds. And up until the last 4 or 5 years, though I taught people to do it, I really didn't understand why and how it worked. It took me that long to get the garbage out of my mind to the point where I could be taught the what and why and how of exactly how forgiveness works. So let me just put it in a nutshell, and I don't expect the average person to remember or understand this the first time they're exposed to it. It's like, you know, listening to song lyrics. The 100th time I hear a song, I can just click off when the radio stops playing that song, and I just, you know, go hanging right on with, you know, Welcome to the Hotel California. It's easy. I got the melody line. I got the intonation. I got the whole thing. But, you know, the first time I heard Welcome to the Hotel California by the Eagles, I couldn't sing that for a tinker's dam because I didn't have the brain cells to understand it. I didn't have the repetition that it takes to make it mine. And so if you think of it, you know, kind of like learning a new melody line in a new song, rarely is one able to repeat that song verbatim, melody line and all, accurately until they've heard it a significant number of times. And so it is with forgiveness. And there's an extra complication with forgiveness that isn't there with learning a new song. When you learn a new melody line in a song, there isn't something in your head that says, but it's supposed to be like this. Except unless you hear somebody, you know, have you ever heard a band do a cover song for a song that you know really well, that you know every nuance, every line, every little thing, and this new band does it differently? They put a new intonation into one of the lines, and you start saying, oh, wait a minute, that's not the way it's supposed to be. Have you ever had that happen? I know everybody has. I have lots of times. I tend to, you know, music is a thing for me, and I tend to really tap into every nuance of the original recording after I've heard it X number of times. And when somebody comes along and sings it in a new way, number one, I can't sing it in that new way in my head. And number two, my brain jumps in and says, whoa, wait a minute, that's not the way it's supposed to be. Well, we've been taught all kinds of things, all kinds of babble. You know, you remember that Tower of Babel, and it speaks about how men going to accomplishment were threatening to God, which is an interesting joke to tell, and that God forced us into speaking different languages. Now, of course, men always have somebody else to blame, so it was all God's fault, that we have created the kinds of denial that leave us in a separated mind, and that literally every person on the planet speaks a different language. If we've got 7.5 billion people, there are 7.5 billion languages. And when I say that, you know, you say, well, no, you know, there are several million people that speak French. Well, they all speak the same language. No, they don't. If you say a word in French, does the same image, the same emotion, the same nuance come to one person as another? No. There are all kinds of different nuances. Everybody speaks a different language. And out of the language that we speak, our mind builds pictures and realities. There's some interesting Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, there are a maximum of 9 bits of data that go into building our reality, the world that we see. Something has to tell the mind which 9 bits of data it is going to use to build the world that it sees. Something has to do that. Something in your mind has to direct your mind to use certain data. And in the same situation, something has to tell my mind which data it's going to use. Our offering is that the thing that tells the mind how to build the world it sees is our goals. When I formulate a goal, I create a stress in my mind, and according to that goal, my mind uses data resonated by that goal to build a world, literally, to build a picture, to build a world. Now, if when I load a goal into my mind, that goal causes my mind to use internal data based in hostility or fear, that goal causes my mind to use corrupt data to build the world that it sees. Therefore, I'm going to be in some kind of error. That makes sense so far. And I'll ask that question of Julie. Am I saying enough that you're staying with me, Julie, with that?
Yes, I'm with you for the most part.
Okay. So I load a goal into my mind, and the goal resonates certain information for me. My goal determines which information is going to get into my awareness. If the data or the information that comes into my awareness is based in hostility or fear, then my mind is now using corrupt data to build the world that I see and out of which my behavior comes. And therefore, using corrupt data, my mind is in error and my behavior is going to be off base. So when I'm in hostility or fear, I want to shebag. In the Aramaic language, the word forgive is the word shebag. And it literally, it's a word that's been translated as forgive into English out of the Aramaic, but it literally means to cancel. So when I cancel my goal, I just remove the condition that causes my mind to use hostility or fear to build the pictures that I see and the world that I experience. And so what happens is that information which fills my awareness, my 9-bit mind, as a result of the goal, when I cancel the goal, that world collapses. My hostility or fear-based world collapses. And when it collapses, I just opened a pathway into the part of my mind that contains the hostility or fear. And now, instead of bringing that data forward as a picture of somebody else, I get to bring that data forward directly to awareness. And as I bring the hostility or fear in me forward in the presence of love, if you look at the worksheet process, the step before you cancel the goal, you step into activating the presence of love. And so if love is active and present in me, and I collapse the world based in hostility or fear, I get to process my internalized hostility or fear. And that is called healing. In essence, that's why you cancel the goal. Now, the thing that's very confusing or that brings up confusion for most people is they go, well, but this is a perfectly good goal. So why would I cancel it? That's crazy. Everybody deserves to have this. And I say, you know something? You're absolutely right. Everybody deserves to have that. You know, that's a really wonderful goal. I hold that goal myself. But you see, there's a difference between you and me right now. When I load that goal, it brings up love in me. And therefore, I know my mind is on track. If you're loading that goal and it brings up hostility or fear in you, your mind is off track. And to get back on track, you want to process through your hostility or fear so that you can go ahead and load that wonderful goal and it only resonates love in you. And when that happens, then you'll produce love in your world, in your physiology, and in everything that you do. But as long as it's accessing hostility or fear, our thesis is that that hostility or fear has to be processed out, has to be removed. And you'll notice that the babble of the world is primarily hostility and fear-based. The people who made up the language that runs virtually everybody's mind in our culture is hostility and fear. You look at the television set, you look at the movies, you look at the, just look at the front page of the newspaper. Look at today, a 12-year-old boy goes into a school and starts shooting. What was running that child's mind? I guarantee that he didn't just walk out of a meeting with his family where everybody said, you know, Johnny, you're so wonderful, and the kids at school and the teachers, and, you know, there's so much love in your world. Isn't that awesome? I guarantee that's not the language that kid was speaking today. And so when the goals we load into our minds elicit internal responses of hostility or fear, the way to directly process and remove that hostility or fear is by canceling the goals. And then when you're complete with processing the hostility or fear, if it was, in fact, a loving goal, hey, reestablish it. And if the only thing left in you is love around that goal, then have at it. Watch yourself create it. It'll be an awesome result. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense. She has her mouth full. But she was just saying, yes, that makes sense, because then you're coming from a place of love.
From a place of love instead of fear.
Yeah. Exactly. And so the whole idea, you know, when we asked the question at the beginning of the Why workshop, how many have ever held a newborn child and recognized that everybody on the planet, their answer when they actually tap into and describe the newborn is some variation on the theme of love, then we recognize that human life is about that. And what we're looking to do is to bring the human form into alignment with human life, so that the only literal frequencies that are held in it are those based in love, that hostility and fear is gone, that the babble has been removed. And we go back to our original posture of speaking the same language as everybody else on the planet, and it is called the language of love. And I'm not talking about some kind of airy-fairy language of love. I'm talking about the truth is that coming from the being that we are as newborns. You know, Yeshua talks about how a child shall lead them. What was he saying? What he was saying is somebody who's tapped into love and speaks in terms of and out of that space of love is going to lead the world. The people who are doing the babble based in hostility, you know, I was watching, you know, we get the BBC here in Portugal, so I've been watching that the last day or two. And you listen to how they're going to do the next summit, and they're going to do the next this and this. They're going to work out this fear and this rage and this battle and this and this and this. And it's all babble. It's all babble. What we need is for somebody who can step up to the plate and say, I am love. You are love. I had the thought today, actually, that of starting a Massages for Peace program where we get people who are experts at massage, at loving massage, and we go into war zones and we just get individual soldiers who've got guns ready to kill each other, and we convince them to come off of the battlefield for a minute and touch each other in loving ways. And I know that that's going to bring up all kinds of babble in everybody's mind, but if you could imagine those who are sitting with rifles pointing at each other, stepping into a space where they actually are allowed loving touch toward and from each other, how long do you suppose the war would last? Now, there'll be a lot of babblers who'll be really peeved at that one. There'll be a lot of babblers who'd say, no, my soldiers are trained in hate, and you don't dare teach them to do something loving that's caring and recognizes that enemy that we have that we need to kill so we can steal their property. You don't dare teach them that that other person is love and that they're love, because, God, then they won't kill anybody. And what power would I have then? How am I going to steal from the men? But imagine Massages for Peace. People in war zones taking a timeout, 24 hours. 24 hours, not just a ceasefire, because most people who stop shooting guns still shoot their mouths off and their babble off, and the war continues. But imagine if there was a 24-hour ceasefire where the enemies moved into each other's homes for one day, lovingly fed, cared for, and nurtured each other like they were family. You want to solve war? That'll do it overnight.
So,
and
Michael,
Jeannie has a question for me.
Oh, please, let's hear it.
Go ahead.
Actually, I just wanted to add to, can you hit mute because I'm double. It picks up on his phone and mine too, and I hear myself twice. Anyway, I just wanted to add to what he was saying about canceling the goal. One of the easiest ways for me to remember it is, you know, we're creators. And so if there's a goal, something that we want, and we don't have it, why haven't we created it yet? It's because there is a part of us that feels like we can't have it or we don't deserve it. Okay. And until that part is cleared up, then we're not going to get the goal. So keeping the goal isn't what's going to help us achieve it. We actually have to cancel what's keeping us from it. Then once we get that cleared up, then we can go back and reset the goal, and then we can get to it. So I just wanted to add that. And then also what you were saying about the little boy that did the shooting in Nevada, killed a teacher and then killed himself and put two students in critical condition. And one of the other students said before he did the shooting, he heard they heard him saying, why do you keep teasing me? Why do you keep saying that about me? And so evidently he was picked on. And this was his way of taking care of it. And it's sad.
Cool, good input, sweetie. There's another piece that Jeannie often adds to the Why workshop when she's there, when people get confused about canceling the goal, and that is that she uses the analogy of, imagine that she's sitting at the computer and working on a Word document, and I come into the room and let her know that that there's an error in the spreadsheet that she just sent me by email. She can't change what's in the spreadsheet as long as the Word document's on the screen. She's got to cancel or collapse the Word document to make room for the spreadsheet to be an awareness for the changes and the corrections to be made. In exactly the same way, canceling the goal allows us to collapse the current reality so we can do a repair on the hostile and fearful parts of the mind. And then, you know, reestablish the goal, go back and go for it. And or oftentimes one will find that their goal was a red herring. It really wasn't what they wanted at all. and it was a way of covering another part of their minds that they didn't want to deal with. So Tim, I think you started to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say that when I'm trying to explain this to people in a session, I give them a brief overview of how a goal is a tool that motivates my behavior, because without a goal, I don't do anything. And then I talk about how
a hammer
is a really good tool, and I wouldn't want to try and build a house without one. But if I pick up my hammer and start hitting myself in the head and causing all kinds of pain and damage, it doesn't matter how good the tool is. If I'm using it incorrectly, anybody with sense is going to tell me, Tim, put down the tool. And in that way,
absolutely, good way to say it.
And I've literally taken to having a hammer in the office. It used to have a felt pad on the end, but so people get it. They get it with the visual, and they get it with the analogy of the tool. My goals are just tools. I can choose them. I can pick them up. I can put them down. People, coaches like Julie, help people redefine their goals all the time. And they understand the power of a goal to either bring me closer to what I desire or to confound that process.
Well, Julie Haverstick, who's the woman who lives at Heartland and wrote the book Healing Children, Loving Children, in teacher's training this year, she was teaching the step on goals in the workshop. And she brought a little fire truck with her, a little car, and the fire truck, when you ran its wheels, it made a siren noise. And so, as she demonstrated the idea of the driver, she took the truck and ran its wheels across, you know, right across the whole whiteboard, and you know, to make the point. Okay, so our goal is a driver. If you remember that the goal is the driver, the quality of information that the driver accesses is really important. And if it accesses hostility or fear-based content, cancel it so that you can clean up the hostility and fear. If it accesses loving content, have at it, go for it. And you look at most people, when someone is not fulfilling their goals, what comes forward for them is hostility or fear. You know, you look at people, you know, notice you've never been enraged at somebody who's doing everything you always wanted them to do. When does your rage come up? When they stop doing what you want them to do. You mean when they stop following your goals. The problem isn't that they've stopped following your goals, doing what you want them to do. The problem is that your goal links to your hostility, to your rage. And it is the key way with which to directly access and heal years and years and years and sometimes generations and generations of dissociated rage and content.
So what do you think, Julie? Is that getting to the point of clarity on where we're going with that idea?
It is. I love it. It brings up a lot of thought for me. In terms of ways to further point my clients to making that distinction around letting go of things that aren't working for them and being at choice to recreate new pathways to work towards what it is that they truly want.
Yes. And you know, in some cases, the goal really is what they want, but the internal dissociated block is the thing that keeps them from getting it. And that's mm-hmm. where canceling the goal becomes the key way into the internal dissociated content. You know, the goal can be absolutely wonderful, glorious. Everybody should have this. And if when I load it into my mind, it accesses my hostility or fear, then it becomes the key way to healing that part of my mind. And so it's not necessarily I can't ever have this or I want to cancel this goal for eternity. At the end of the worksheet, I might cancel a particular goal and reestablish it 100 times before I've cleaned out that dissociated part that holds my hostility or fear, and then out of clarity I can truly create what it is that I want in my world. And it is the missing piece, and when I say that, I'm talking about P-E-A-C-E. It's the peace in all the world. There's just, you know, in the Buddhist tradition, they talk about, you know, letting go of attachments. But when we went into a Buddhist monastery where a gentleman who was confirmed to be the Buddha of wisdom, in, at least in the reincarnation of the Buddha of wisdom in the Tibetan tradition, and after we taught this, he's like, we don't have anything like this in our work, and this is the key. He said, I need this to be given to all of my students. Yeah. It's like it's time for us to be restored, and this is the key to restoration. My take is the reason the world is so insane, the reason why there's such hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, and slaughter on the planet is because almost 2,000 years ago, the word forgive was had its definition changed into pardoning. If it weren't for that single act, if forgiveness were still in full force and effect in the world, we wouldn't have people walking around with all the rage and guilt and grief that they have. And as you recognize that, Vladimir Lenin said, if you want to destroy a culture, change the meaning of its words. When the word forgive, as a tool for going inside yourself and removing what never belonged, was changed into pardoning, a tool for letting other people off the hook because your pain is active in you, we destroyed the world. And the destruction is, you know, we're at the point where, I don't know how many people there are on the planet right now, probably a dozen or two, that if they push one button, the whole game would be over for everybody. And that's all a product of the rage, the guilt, the grief, the pain, that instead of being forgiven, has been dissociated from and projected onto others. So we're just here to restore the active presence of love and the tool of forgiveness to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And it's interesting to watch the doors that are opening. We just finished participating. We were guests of the Dutch Royal Academy of Physicists at a conference on creativity and science, physics, actually. And listen to 3 days, 4 days of presenters as guests of the Niels Bohr family. And Niels Bohr is a Nobel Prize winning physicist who actually discovered the atom. And, you know, there's an institute there in Copenhagen. And so we were at that conference, and his family is working with getting this tool into a conference that works with the Academy of Sciences. So we just finished spending a week with those folks, and we're looking forward to hearing back. I talked to Niels Bohr's granddaughter yesterday again, and we're working on developing a conference that will integrate forgiveness and therefore the truth about who we are as love into the physics world. And when you look at this in terms of physics, you can a group of physicists who understand the Aramaic idea of forgiveness are going to walk away scratching their heads and say, oh my God, we can't survive long term without forgiveness. And so it's interesting to just watch the doors that are opening around the globe. It's fun to be a participant. So we did we actually haven't got that yet. We need to communicate with the folks in Sweden, but with an alternative medical magazine, we did a documentary with them just a week before that in Sweden. So things are moving on a global scale in ways that we never could have imagined. So it's a delight to hear that you guys are doing what you're doing on that end.
Hey, Michael. It's Rex.
Yes, sir. Hey there, young
man. Good to hear your voice.
You're a hard guy to get a hold of.
It's been interesting, and I got your calls. I've had my phone on mute, so I get them late. And by the time I got him, we finished yesterday at around 9:30 p.m. our time, Chicago, which that would have put me somewhere around 4 or 5 in the morning or 3 in the morning your time. So
wouldn't have been
ideal.
A little late.
You've definitely been in my awareness. Thank you for your follow-up calls, and we'll connect once we finish this day probably tomorrow, if that works for you.
Cool.
But thank you, and
sounds
thank you
good.
For your explanation. Again.
Delighted. Glad to be on the team.
That was it.
All right. Fabulous. What's happening with the prison program? It picks up again in 2 weeks now?
We start back on Tuesday, the 29th, and I will make contact with the chaplain when I get back to reconnect to see if he's reposted and where we're going to be. And I'm inclined to think we're going to be doing the evaluations again, another layer of the people that are still being opened up to the program. And then we'll go the following week and do the additional, explanation of the evaluations, and we will start the program. And we have, as I spoke before, the 16 weeks will start, and according to the chaplain, that we'll have how long we want to do it is up to us, which is really nice to have that flexibility.
Awesome. That's so cool. So cool. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you, and obviously congratulations to you as well, Michael, because it's our work, not any one.
Are you there, Michael?
Well, is anybody else there in the room in Chicago have a thought for us, or should we check and see if there are any callers on the line?
Let's check with Michelle to see if anyone has their hand up.
Yeah, we have actually a few people waiting. Hi, just wanted to say, Tim, I hope you get some guests tonight at your Mindshifter support group. I encourage, if I was there, I would go. So hopefully maybe you can fit in the schedule. So we have a couple 970 calls. Carrie's waiting, but there was somebody waiting first since the beginning. So what if we start with them, 970-759. Hello.
This is Cindy.
970, you're on the air. Give us a name. Where are you calling from?
This is Cindy in Southwest Colorado, a friend of Carrie's.
Well, hey there, young lady. It's good to hear your voice.
Hello, Michael in Portugal and Jeannie and everyone. I had a couple of things I just wanted to share. I did have a really profound moment that was revealed to me, and I'd like to tell you about that. I'm going to have a hard time because I've tried to call in for the past several days, and I haven't had the guts to do it, but today I decided I have. That's one of my things, and I'm going to do a worksheet on being afraid to call into this show. That's what I'm going to do today. But several days, I've wanted so badly to call, and I started hyperventilating, and my face gets red, and I just haven't been able to push the button. I'm not sure about why, but I need to process this and figure that out, and I know how to do it, thanks to you and all of you. Yesterday,
cool.
Dr. Tim was asking for examples of how using these tools has worked for you, and I'm going to real quickly, briefly, try to tell you how this has worked for me. I was sitting with my husband, Brad. We were eating breakfast, listening to your radio show. I think it was a week ago. And I think it was Susan talking about how she had an experience at the airport where she missed her flight. Well, about 10 years ago, the same thing happened to me, only I went the opposite direction that she did. She described it as people around her thinking she was nuts because she wasn't upset. I had one of the most fearful experiences there at the airport in my entire life, and I just totally capsized into that fear. And as she was talking about her experience at the airport, I went back to that, and I decided to really look at that and try to feel the feelings I was feeling instead of just this huge, huge blanket of fear washing over me. And I realized
what?
I was having these feelings. I was being abandoned. I was alone. There was nobody there I knew. I had missed my flight. The weather was horrible. The flights were canceled. I was going to have to spend the night in this horrible, dark, dank place by myself, scared to death. And suddenly I flashed on being 2 years old. I was 2.5, and everything was dark around me, and there was kind of a misty fog, and I was looking at my feet. I had on these little black shoes and white socks. And it was a feeling of being sexually abused. It was the same feeling.
Mm.
And I had never,
right?
ever even considered that possibility. But I was feeling the same thing. It was being able to feel the same things and feel them and not just be afraid, not just experiencing fear, but actually feeling those feelings and realizing that. And then I shared that with Brad, and we talked about it. And then I don't even know if that really happened, or maybe I was accessing genetics. I don't know. And then I
Absolutely.
Went through this. Then I went through this questioning. I kept trying to see a face. Who was it? And then I went through all the relatives and who, and I decided no. I need to ask you about that. I don't think that's where this is supposed to take me, because isn't that blaming somebody? And it could be genetic, right? Maybe it didn't even happen
Absolutely.
To me, but I sure
Actually,
felt those feelings. I was there.
Right.
And your tools helped me get there, as awful as it is. I'm 63 years old. And it's taken me this long to bring that up and to relive it.
And remember that one of the key steps in the worksheet process, again, before canceling the goal, and this is one of the reasons I suspect that you were safe enough to access that, is in step 4, you bring forward the active presence of love and to allow whatever is hidden there to come forward in the presence of love is what dissolves and removes those. Figuring out where it comes from is the booby prize. There's no need to do that. You treat
yeah.
it as it comes forward. You hold love present in your mind as that dissolves, whatever its root is. It's something that could go back 10 generations. I know that oftentimes that's a technique that I use with people when they can't touch into the when and where of it. I ask them to look down and look at their feet and what are they wearing. And oftentimes that becomes a key way into remembering exactly what it is that happened. And so
wow.
you're right on track with that. That's powerful. You're right on track.
Wow.
And, you know, and then there's, of course, the other side of the question is, well, what if it is something that happened in your life? And it's something that somebody needs to be held accountable for. Great. If somebody needs to be held accountable for a behavior that's off base, please move forward and do that, but do the healing work first so that whatever you do, you're coming from your human life, you're coming from that healed space as that active presence of love. And as we do that, we're able to open a space for everybody on the planet to walk through those same issues. So you just did a giant piece of work, young lady. That's awesome. And
you.
Who would have thought somebody on the radio talking about an airport experience could do that? But
I
you
know,
never know what it is that's going to trigger and resonate what needs to be processed. And canceling that goal is the key way into that hidden part. So that's awesome.
And I wanted Susan to know that her telling that story is what got me to where I am now with this. And I
Fabulous.
Just appreciate
well, she's probably
her so
on
much.
The show.
So that's why I'm sharing this. That encouraged me to share this. And also my fear about calling
that's
in.
That's fabulous.
It's ridiculous. I know it's...
Nice work.
Oh, well, actually, I'm out here wandering in the wilderness of the San Juan National Forest with my two dogs, so... We're making our way back
nice.
Out of the wilderness. So thank
nice.
You.
Hey, Mike.
Metaphor.
Hey, Michael. Michael.
And I appreciate and really support you in the fact that you've stayed connected with your work and you've been continuing to build the skill of doing your work to move forward to that level. I think I heard Mark's voice in there.
Yeah, I was just going to share yesterday in our meeting, something got triggered, which was an identical experience to what the caller just
Cindy.
Shared. What, Cindy. Thank you, Cindy. And it was quite an emotional piece, and I was thankful for being surrounded by Tim and Rex and Brea here because they helped me support me through it. And one of the things that it was going into a deeper layer of is something that came up at one of the intensive, which was a generational memory about this. And I thought, oh, it's a generational memory. It's not mine. And so I processed through it in one of the breath exercises and just let it go. But it was when it came up again here, and there was that question, like, wait, was this real or wasn't it? And in the process, Tim took me through an experience that helped me really resolve it completely. And when I went back to look at who it was, all the people I loved were there clapping. And I was confused, why are they clapping? Because this was a traumatic experience that everyone can acknowledge who's here that I went through. And then I realized that I had to take into, or I chose to take in those energies and embrace those energies in love, and it opened up a space for all the generations to heal. And it was a celebration because I'm sure it could have been one or two or three or 10 generations back, who knows? And what I realized when I went home was, who cares? Because it just healed. And it was really refreshing. And I felt compelled to share that. And I thank everybody here for their support yesterday.
And thank you. Thank you so much.
That's awesome. Right on track. And one of the things that develops, and maybe I'll ask Jeannie, tomorrow, she had gotten a letter from someone who was at one of the intensives this summer, and as you develop the skills, and this is one of the skill sets we invite people to develop as they do their work, is to more and more be able to decode the things that have been hidden inside of us. And there was a woman who was at the Laws of Living intensive this summer, and she shared the result of some work that she did and what came up, and she was very, very specific in the memory of her great-great-grandmother. So maybe we'll get to share that letter tomorrow. And in the meantime, I think Carrie have something to share with us?
Sorry, I'm mute. Carrie is really wanting to tell you some really cool news. Cindy, I'm going to unmute you for now.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you that Susan Darnell's listening, and I'm sure she wouldn't mind me saying that, and she probably is thrilled for you. I know her and her love for people, and she's so glad she can help. So,
thank you, everyone.
Delighted. Okay, glad to be on the team. We're down to less than a minute.
Hey,
90 seconds.
Now, I have a question for you. I've got a quote from you, and I want a first sentence for it, and I have some really cool news, and I can't be on tomorrow. So it says, he's referring to the multi-generational database stored in our carbon-based memory that robs us of awareness that we were created by the Creator to act as active presence of love. I'd like a sentence that goes before that. Can you get an email from me?
Michael, are you there?
I guess. Oh, I thought I was cut off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Send it
so,
to me at my mjr187@gmail.com address.
Okay. We'll do it.
All right.
Please join us tomorrow. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Thank you.
Blessings, everybody. Thank you.